But a lot of projects out there are still struggling with the distribution aspect, especially because either of too much focusing on the product or lack of knowledge. What are some things that have really worked for you on the distribution side of things to really crack the code over there, to start getting more users, to get the platform out there with, I would assume, like the limited resources and in the space that you are at with Bonder at the time in the space you're at?
Yeah. We started with much more limited resources than we have now. But yeah, the way that I would think about it is, you know, folks believe they have a good idea and then they want to go off into a corner and build that product and then sort of release it upon the world, right? And they think that like that's kind of the approach that they should take. In most instances, there are some instances in which that is what you have to do. And you want to tell a huge story and you want to have a lot of press and like all that jazz. In other instances, and I'd say like the vast majority, probably like 90% of the time, you really want to get your product in front of customers as soon as there is something to respond to, as soon as there's something that someone can have an emotional response to, right? So if you have some like fundamental new architecture that you want to get in front of people, and like, I'll use FriendTech as an example, even though they're maybe not doing so hot right now. I think they actually shut down the smart contracts, but there's some psychological element to being able to like buy shares of other people, right? And so like you want to go in and you want to test the market and see if there's any interest in folks deciding like, yes, I'm actually going to buy shares in someone's like, you know, social productivity or just like shares in that individual generally, right? Because of how they're going to perform across social media. And then you can just get sort of feedback on that concept, like whatever that sort of ember is, you want to get that out into the world, let folks respond to it and either know, yes, like I should be building this direction or I should not be building in this direction. So rather than just kind of like shuttering yourself off and waiting until your product is like fully feature complete, you really want to get the core element of whatever the thing is out there as soon as possible. The core element for us was just asking these silly little survey questions like 18 months ago or 24 months ago and seeing that more and more people wanted to sort of engage in that manner. It was like a useful structure for people to share their insights and their sentiment with them. And so we've just been building up our capabilities over time and responding to customers as opposed to trying to just like surprise them with this new idea. And it's easy to go too far, and we're guilty of this sometimes too. It's easy to go too far down the path of kind of trusting in the product that you believe people should like, as opposed to putting it into the market and building for what people clearly do like when you have some sort of data or some sort of like positive feedback that's coming in from that market. So anyways, a few ways to do that. And I think maybe the best way to do that, I'm biased, but use a platform like Farcaster. If you don't like Farcaster, use Twitter. Right. And start posting things publicly and don't worry about whether or not you get a ton of responses initially. Right. Like you don't need a ton of likes and a ton of retweets or recasts or anything like that. You just need to start telling your narrative and doing it out in the public. Right. And having a consistent narrative, too, is hugely, hugely important. So even if you have like a few casts or a few tweets that don't have a lot of engagement early on, you still cast and continue the story that you are telling. So if you say like, hey, on Friday, we launched this feature. Then like on Monday or Tuesday, cast again about like what happened with that feature. Like, did people engage with that feature? Is it something that failed? Like, you now have a narrative that you can start to tell to get people on board with whatever the product is that you're building. And again, even if it's just a few people that are replying to it, you're at least starting to do the storytelling part and you're starting to focus a lot more on sort of your brand building and being aware of what your story should be. And so I highly recommend that people build in public. I think like that's probably a narrative that you're going to hear a lot on this podcast, and not be afraid of being bad at the start, right? It's okay to be like subpar. You have to start subpar at some point in time, and then to just continuously build your story and be consistent. And this is something that I'm preaching to myself as I say this too. I could be a lot better about it.
Yeah, I mean, like, especially like in a space like this, like building in public is quite an important aspect. One thing I want to touch on, because there's very conflicting views around the topic, is that some people would say like your end user doesn't really know what they want. And then others would say always ask like the end user, what is the next thing you should do and like survey that. How do you bridge that gap? Because of course, sometimes the end user might not know what is the best development moving forward, while still a lot of end users are aiming towards that side of the equation, even though it might not be the best fit. So how do you define as a startup, like what direction to even take, or even with Ponder, like as your product is directly over there? Like, how do you survey and get user feedback directly and know what is viable and what is not?
Yeah, really good question. One of the things that people would say as a joke at Apple was, we don't do testing here, we get it right the first time, which is kind of tongue-in-cheek, but actually is somewhat accurate there too. And that, I think, so there's always going to be this degree to which taste matters for a founder, right? And taste I kind of define as the ability to intuit the right ideas and then the right potential ideas and then make a good decision about what path to progress going forward. You're never going to do something groundbreaking if you just ask users, hey, like, what's your feedback on this? What should we build? What should we build? What should we build? Everyone's going to have a million different ideas. And also, people don't do well without having some sort of an anchor. Like, generally, humans are more, we think back to my creative writing days, the most creative that you can be as a writer is when you have conditions or you have anchors around which you have to write. So like, if I said, hey, Chris, just go write a story about anything, make it as creative as possible, it would probably flounder in some way. But if I said, like, go write a story that happened on a Monday when it was 85 degrees out on a desert island and there was a half-sunken ship there, well, then your brain is going to start to, like, put the pieces together, like, utilizing those different constraints to make decisions. So anyways, all of that is to say, like, having constraints in place is hugely, hugely useful as you're a founder. But you need to, you know, getting back to the taste point here for a second, you need to decide, okay, what are the core ideas that I theoretically am interested in, that I think are going to be novel, that are like the things that I would pitch to a VC and say, okay, this is what's going to be game changing in the world. I don't know exactly what the product's going to look like, but I know that the world is sort of dying for this transition to occur or this evolution to occur. And you should be like almost spiritual about that, right? Like, you should be like very, very devoted to that idea and that evolution happening. And then what you have is this problem of like, okay, so then what's the path to get there? You've planted your flag on top of a hill, and that's kind of like the ultimate end game of the product. And that should be something that is net new and revolutionary if you can muster it. And then as you navigate go up that hill, right? And to like get to that flag that's been planted on top of the hill, that's where you start to use customer feedback, right? And that's where you initiate, you know, you say, maybe I'm going to test this type of polling. For us, we have polls and then we have questions and answers. And now we have predictive polling. And that's like another test. That's like another like hiking trail that we're attempting to take, right, to get to the top of the mountain. And we're going to see what kind of customer feedback we get as we build all these different types of products. And some will suck, right? And you just need to be able to kill those. You need to be able to kill code and not worry about it and not be emotional about it. And then you sort of like venture into another path, right? And at each of those junctures, you get it in front of people. You see what their emotional feedback is to whatever that sort of product route is that you've discovered. And then you either add more resources and more time and attention, or you kill it. So I'd say like there's two elements to the story here. One is taste and intuition and making these big decisions. And then the other is responding to customers when they tell you like, no, that's not right, or like, that doesn't feel good. Or they say, oh, hell yes, this is going to be massive, right? And that's the most fun. When you get something in front of customers and then they DC you or they DM you and they're like, okay, this is going to be huge. That's when you get really excited as a founder.
Yeah, and that's like what really moves the product along. And one feature that you just mentioned, you just launched predictive polling. Tell me a bit about that. That sounds pretty interesting, especially in these situations.
Private beta launch, but okay. So predictive polling takes the idea of, you know, prediction markets are hot right now. It's an election year. Prediction markets are always hot every 4 years when they're like a massive election, right? And then they sort of die off in between. But there is some novel grain of truth behind prediction markets in that when people have to put money on the line for something, they're much more inclined to tell the truth, right? What we're doing with our predictive polls is we're effectively saying, okay, we're going to contain this polling experiment within the confines of this frame. So it won't have an oracle to decide like what the outcome should be. So I'll give you an example. If we ask like, what is the best cookie on planet Earth? And there's Thin Mints and chocolate chip cookies and Oreos and whatever else, right? Within the predictive poll, what we're going to do is allow people to make a selection, right? And then they can add a little, it's kind of like a wager. But really, we're funding it right now. It's all sponsored by Ponder, just while we work things out. But you sort of vote on whatever you think other people are most likely to vote on. So like what you think the global consensus will be on every topic, as opposed to what you think the best thing will be. And then when we add this little element, like right now we're giving people one optimism to vote with, and that's going into a pool, and then the people who select the right thing are going to get paid out by that pool. When there's a little payout like that, a little reward like that, we think people are more likely to choose the outcome and like whatever the actual best cookie is as agreed upon, you know, planet Earth, as opposed to whatever their sort of personal option is. So that's what we're testing out within these predictive polls. It's not, I'm not going to call it a predictive market or a prediction market because there are legal issues with that. But also it really isn't quite a prediction market because there's not some oracle who says this thing did or didn't happen. It's really just like a self-contained expertise game or knowledge game where a bunch of people are sort of saying, okay, I think this is what most people believe the answer would be. And we think there's going to be novel new insights that come out of that, and also novel new sort of interactions between people who just like to play around on social as well. So that's kind of the early iteration of it. It could evolve out into a bunch of different ways, but you know, it's one of the paths that we're choosing to test out. And we're actually, I got a few of those messages that I just mentioned from people who said, oh shit, this is going to be awesome. So we're pretty pumped about launching it.
That sounds pretty cool though. Like, I'm really curious, like when you have, like, you're going to gain a lot of novel data and insights from that. Where do you see, especially within the case of predictive polling and the bigger case of polls and what you're building with Ponder, what are some of the insights and data when a brand or a builder is actually trying to get user feedback that they should really pay attention to, that you see often builders making mistakes with, or they're not paying enough attention to, or they're just going on the easy path and not asking the right questions?
Yeah, that's a good question. Like what kind of polls or what kind of questions provide the most insight into someone's project or product?
In the sense of, you could take it from that perspective, but also, what are the things to pay attention to when gathering that user feedback to drive you in the right direction so you can actually utilize your resources in the best way possible, especially in a space like this?
Okay, got it. Yeah, that's a good question. So very rarely do you want to have your users tell you exactly what to build or tell you like, hey, what product features should we build out here? Much more often, you want to get a sort of emotional response from them. Right. So like if something that you're going to like, if there's a pain point for them, putting your finger on the pulse, trying to understand what that pain point is and then solving for that pain point and focusing your customer questions much more on kind of like what the emotion is that's driving them versus what the actual product itself is going to be. Like you as the founder, or you as the product builder should be the one who's responsible for figuring out the solutions to those pain points. But asking people what their thoughts are and what they feel about certain topics can actually be a much more, it can lead to much more honest responses from people and much more informed responses because people know kind of what their emotions are. They might not know how those emotions should translate into whatever the product is that you're building. So I think that's an important sort of way to differentiate responses. Now there's also, and I'm just thinking through, the other element here that's useful is to compare what sort of polling and surveying responses look like with the actual data that you see on the back. So Dan Romero he talks about stated preference versus revealed preference a lot, right? And that's basically people are going to say that they like this thing or they care about this thing, but then in reality, like you can go and look at the numbers and like maybe no one actually uses this feature, even though if you ask them, they'll say, oh yeah, that's an awesome feature, right? And like people, maybe they think it's an awesome feature and that's totally cool. If like when they're reminded of it, they're like, oh yeah, that's like kind of a cool thing, but no one's deciding to take the action, like to go do that thing. So I would also recommend that people consider these as like two sides of the same coin, what people actually say they want and then what their preferences are. And you can learn from both of them, right? And like the more information that you have as a founder, the more well equipped you're going to be to make decisions. But I would keep that in mind too. Like you should have an analytics dashboard, even if it's very, very lightweight, to go along with the types of polling and surveying.